You're listening to the ModernDogTrainer.net podcast, bringing you the best industry tips and topics for professional dog trainers worldwide. Now here are your hosts, Ines Gesho and Kat Camplin.
Good evening. Welcome to the second episode of the Modern Dog Trainer podcast. My name is Ines Gesho.
And I'm Kat Camplin.
And today we're going to be talking about one of the most important pieces of dog training equipment, your website.
My brain just crashed and oh my gosh, what do I do episode.
And today we'll be joined by Alice Tong of Choose Positive Design Company to discuss some do-it-yourself options as well as the top five things to prepare when working with a web designer.
Show notes are found at themoderndogtrainer.net and feel free to add the podcast to your RSS feed. You can also follow us on Twitter or Facebook at Modern Dog Trainer. So put your feet up, grab a cup of something, and let's get started.
All right, Alice. So first up, we're going to talk about some DIY options for dog trainers that maybe don't have such a big budget yet. Especially starting out, it can be kind of intimidating. First of all, do you feel like a website is even mandatory?
Hi, Inez. Yeah, I do. I mean, this day and age, I think it is a good idea to have a website to add some legitimacy to you and your services as a dog trainer.
Absolutely. I would agree with that. Where can somebody get started? What are some good platforms to look at?
Yeah, so depending on your budget, there are a couple that I would recommend. So the first probably most popular one that's been around for the longest is WordPress. And with WordPress, you know, you sometimes need some coding experience and you sometimes might also need the budget to hire a developer to help you. Other than that, though, if you don't have a big budget, which we mentioned, you can go through WordPress and try to figure it out, but it's a little bit of a steeper learning curve. So the other two that I would recommend is Squarespace and Wix. And so both have their pros and cons, but recently I've been using Squarespace a lot for clients, and it's just very user-friendly. It's easy to make edits on and things like that. And yeah, it's been around long enough where I think, you know, you can trust a lot of the aspects of like SEO and reliability of the builder. And there is a new one that's out that I've been testing out. It's called Webflow, and that's more for designers, but it's also, you know, gaining some traction as another possible builder for people and or people with some more design skills to be looking at as well.
Interesting. Yeah, I've heard of Squarespace and I've used it for one website. And I guess if you're starting out, that's definitely a good option. But one of the things I found out is I can't take a current website and move it over to Squarespace, unfortunately. Not yet, at least, as far as I know.
Yeah, you can take, I think, a website out of Squarespace, which is at least useful.
Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely. Great. Those are some great options. Yeah. As far as a really nice looking website that's going to attract clients, as far as photos go, do you feel like those are important?
I do. I think, you know, having a high resolution photo that's clear is also a sign of professionalism for your clients to feel like, you know, you're serious about the image that you're projecting out to the world. And so I do think it's pretty important to have some good photos up there.
Interesting. And what would you do if you don't have a high quality camera to take your own? What are some good alternatives to that?
You know, these days there are a lot of people taking a lot of photos, and there are a lot of them that are free. So one of my favorite search engines is Creative Commons Images. And if you just go to their website, you could, you know, search through different other websites, and they will be choosing photos that will be free and usable with open copyright. So that's really nice to have these options today. And when you get to Creative Commons, I've actually been searching a lot in Flickr, which is like a kind of an older photo website, but it's kind of gained, still has some popularity, and it actually does have a lot of images that are pretty, you know, nice and good quality if you just search through them. And I like that because it's a little bit different from stock photography, and it's just sometimes some really good photographers out there and they're willing to share their work. So that's one recommendation I have for images.
Yeah, we actually use Flickr for a lot of the images we have on the Modern Dog Trainer blog. So
awesome.
It's definitely a great resource.
And we do still have to worry about attribution, right? I mean, you can't just steal it, download it, and put it up on your website.
Yeah, and that's the thing with the Creative Commons Images search engine. You can put those options in the field, and then it will come up with the copyrights that are usable for you.
Perfect.
So that's nice. Yeah. Yeah. And one other thing I wanted to say about photos that I think some people forget or don't know is we as dog trainers are just, you know, thinking, okay, I want a photo of a dog. So we just type in dog. And, and I think what happens is then you get like the most commonly used photos. So a good tip is just to get a little bit more specific. So, you know, think about your favorite kind of dog, your favorite kind of puppy, and it's better to write German Shepherd instead of dog. And then you'll get some images that are more original that people aren't using as much, and you'll look a little bit more original instead of just the photos that everyone else has on their website.
That's a really great tip.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that before. Kat, did you have any questions so far?
You know, and I think we sort of gear a lot of this information for the startup trainer. So is there a typical number of pages or structure that you should start with? If you're just starting out, you've got your little website and you decided to go with Squarespace or Wix. How many pages? How should it be organized? Is there a minimum that we want out there?
Yeah, you know, these days websites are so different. So I wouldn't really categorize it by pages. I would say it'd be categorized more by information. So I'd have home, services, about, and contact as like the main things to be working on your site. And that can be just one page that scrolls all the way down. That's kind of a popular format right now. If depending on your target audience, if they're younger people, they'll be really used to that format. Even if they're older people, they may be used to that format. And some people like just seeing everything on one page. And so, yeah, you know, you could make that into four pages, but you could also just make it into one. And there's a lot of options for navigation on your website that you can customize for what you think your clients will be comfortable with.
Nice. And is the one page more mobile friendly? Like you just scroll down on your little phone and...
Yeah, you could. And, you know, I guess that is just depends sometimes on preference too and on, you know, your clients, because some people might feel like, hey, where's the rest of the website? And then other people are like, this is great. I don't have to click anything. And then another part of a website, if you wanted to, is to have the a blog page so it can help with, you know, regular updates on your site so you could get more search engine hits for just having, you know, content that's going up. And I think that would be my general recommendation for some of the information and structure that somebody should, you know, think about including. And even if you want to first start with just a landing page, that's better than nothing, you know, just having like one page with your contact info, a beautiful picture, a little bit, you know, cut and paste from like some other description that you have somewhere else of you if you're really unable to get it together. And you can at least have just a landing page, and that'll look better than who, you know, nobody knowing if you're a legitimate service.
Just like a really big business card, right?
Mm-hmm. Better than nothing.
And then as far as logos go, when you're making your website, I think a lot of people like to put their logos up there. But is that a necessity for websites? Like, if you don't have a logo yet, should you wait to have a logo made before you make the website?
I think it all depends on who you're working with. So some website designers do logos as well. And personally, I don't. So I usually refer out to somebody to have them make their logo, and then I'll work around their logo or, add additional insights to it. So I think it's good to have a logo. Again, it, you know, will gear you more toward a professional image, and it will help with people remembering your business and, you know, having that image in their brain when they think about the name of your business.
Very true.
Yeah.
And then you've mentioned briefly about being mobile friendly with the one-page scrolling option. Is being mobile friendly, how important is that, and what exactly does that mean?
Yeah, being mobile friendly is super important these days. I design sites and I still, you know, have trouble just sitting down in front of my computer because it's so convenient just to look at your phone and, you know, look at our iPads. And that's kind of the decade that we're working with right now. And mobile friendly means that the website will adjust in the font sizes and the pictures to be laid out in a way that a viewer can comfortably read on a phone or a tablet. And that's different from just having a desktop view of your website on a phone, which then people have to pinch and, you know, enlarge. And some people will see that and be like, forget it. Next screener. So, yeah. You know, these days people have less patience. And so we want to make sure that it's very readable really fast. And it's 2015, so it's only going to get more mobile from here.
Right.
Yeah. And additionally, I'm sure, Inez, you've known or talk about SEO a lot with the businesses and how Google is now having a lot of their algorithms based on whether your site is mobile friendly. And if it's not, it'll drop in the search ratings.
Exactly.
So it's important to have that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of the things Google considers most important. So if your website is not what you call mobile friendly, then they're not going to preference yours over somebody else's website who might be.
Yeah, definitely.
So really quickly, so the platforms that you recommended, the WordPress, Squarespace, Wix, Webflow, mm-hmm. do they automatically adjust for mobile friendly, or is that like a setting that you would have to do and sort of poke around and find where to set up the mobile friendly option?
Yeah, you know, they're all a little different. Like Squarespace is automatic. Wix is a secondary option where you would need to, you know, look at the design of your mobile-friendly site and kind of adjust it. So they're all a little bit different. And I think depending on the theme that you use in WordPress, that could be possibly different as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. And then we talk a lot about SEO content on the website, but what are some other types of content that you might want on there? Like, how are you, once somebody gets to your website, how are you going to convince them to call you specifically? What are some good ideas to, as far as content goes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I would say, you know, the things that I said before about the pages will still hold. So like what services you're offering, a little bit about you and your bio, and definitely your contact information loud and clear on the site so they can, you know, just touch it once and it'll start dialing. Mm-hmm. And with exactly what to write, I would say, and you would definitely want the location on there so people are also clear, and then it'll show up also better in SEO searches. And depending on your target audience, I would really be customizing your site. And, you know, if there's specific audience you're reaching. Like, if you really want to reach the, like in my case, I'm in the Bay Area, so maybe it's like, you know, the tech young folks, and maybe I wanted to specialize in separation anxiety. And so a lot of my content would be driven toward the client base that I wanted to reach. And so I would use words that I felt like they would be comfortable with. I would use, I would just be explaining and kind of highlighting separation anxiety on my page as the main service. So it's a little bit of a combination of what you think your target audience wants and what you want. Because especially... Yes. Yeah, in the Bay, I mean, there's so many of us trainers, and so we can specialize, and we can still all get clients, which is nice.
That's great, yeah.
So it just kind of depends on where you live, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
So do you find highlighting method or philosophy important in SEO, or are you just sort of saying, like you use separation anxiety as an example, the problem is the selling point?
Yeah, a lot of times it's the problem as the selling point, especially if you're a new trainer and you're just like, I want cases, I'll take anything. So then you may just want to be focusing and highlighting and bullet pointing some of those issues. And for me, I wanted to talk a little bit about my method. So I, you know, did insert in my name, like choose positive dog training. So it's very obvious that's what I do. And I want to weed all of the other stuff out just because it's like doable in where I live to do that. So again, it's about what you care about too. So, you know, if you feel like, oh my gosh, I'm so tired. Like I just I won't have time to weed everybody out. So, and I have a lot of clients. So then you can afford to, you know, talk about your methodology a little bit. But if you're kind of newer, you don't have as many clients, then, you know, I probably wouldn't be stressing that as much. And I would just be like, dogs, you know, training in location, classes, puppies. Like you want to just hit some of those keywords that you think your client base will be typing in SEO. And, you know, that's just things that you can, you know, do a little research on in your community. And most of the time is people are Googling like dog training city.
Right.
So that's something to really be highlighting on your site.
Yeah, nice. And just to be clear for those that are listening, SEO stands for search engine optimization. So that just means that Google's going to show your website for certain words that your clients might be typing into their search. So if that sounds very difficult for you and your skill set, let's talk a little bit about what people might want to look for in a website designer if they chose to go that route.
Well, yeah, I think that's a great question. I would look at the website designer's portfolio and some of the websites that they've already done. So hopefully they have a website. It would be weird if they didn't, first of all, red flag. So look at their portfolio and say, hey, would I want my site to look like this? And if not, then maybe you should keep looking. The other thing is, you know, getting recommendations from friends or trainers, because they'll really know what that person was like to work with. And I would prioritize having that person be somebody that you're comfortable talking to, that you're comfortable communicating with, and that you feel like they're also good communicators with you, which means, you know, being reliable and being you know, timely with feedback and drafts, and also, you know, maybe giving you some sort of timeline on what you can expect, because with any sort of design project, it can just go on and on and on. So for me, I have timelines that I use with my clients, and I think that that can be really helpful so that you feel like you're going to have some resolution and a good product at the end.
Okay. And just a quick question. What is the difference between a designer and a developer?
Yeah, so a designer is somebody who's really kind of putting the visual layout of your site in order. And so that's like structuring it so the user will have like a easy interface to be interacting with. And then the developer is oftentimes the person who can be putting the designer's image onto the computer in code, depending on what builder you're using. And so if you're using Squarespace or Wix, you don't really need a developer. If you're using WordPress, you may want somebody with some development experience, just because it can be sometimes a little bit more complex using WordPress.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
So I've heard a few horror stories of designers sort of putting all the admin rights in the designer's name, and then the dog trainer goes to want to change the design and it's sort of held hostage. Is there a way to sort of make sure that you're going to get the permissions that you need from a designer? What sort of question could you ask to say, hey, are you going to hold my website hostage?
Well, I would probably be straightforward and ask something like that. Yeah, and you know, if you really feel like you want that agreement, I would put it in writing. I would put it in an email, and you would have written communication about that. And that's why sometimes recommendations from friends and other trainers is important, because then you have a little bit more trust that that will happen as well.
Exactly.
Cool. And then just to end, what are the top five things to prepare when working with a website designer?
Yeah, so I would say the first thing is just your business information. So the name of your business, like the license, you know, and making sure you have a license, making sure you have insurance. So kind of like the ethical business practice, I would say just, you know, get your books in order and make sure like your business is okay and running and legitimate.
Okay, that's
definitely a good start. That would be great. And then the second thing is just written content. So, you know, as you're working, the designer usually is not going to be writing everything for you unless, you know, you're paying them a copyright fee and they offer that service. So written content is something that I think is good to start if you haven't already. And, you know, that's just talking about your bio and services you offer. And if anything, just list them out, bullet points, you know, that can be really helpful so that the designer can know like how you want your site to be flowing. And if you would like to hire a copywriter, you could. And also if you do write your own content, you know, have other people, at least one to two other people, look it over. If, you know, you're doing a DIY thing and you're like, this sounds good, it's just like, you know, text, or, you know, these days we're just like write so many things and we're like, oh, this was in a Facebook message, let's just cut and paste, you know. But we want to be like, okay, like, let me think about this. You write a couple drafts. I usually, if the client is not working with the copywriter, I usually tell them like, hey, it's like the last 2 weeks before we're launching, or the last week, like, have you had one to two other people look this over? Because they'll catch silly little edits that, you know, we spelled the wrong and it's just doesn't look good. So yeah. It just, people can catch it for you, and it's not, you know, going to look as casual, and it'll look more professional. So written content was the second thing. Third thing is pictures. So at least having a picture of yourself. You know, if you have other contract trainers, gathering pictures from them. We talked a little bit about high-res photos. So trying to, if you can, get some professional photos done, that would be great. And if you can't afford that, that's okay too. I think, you know, at least just something to have would be good, because people want to see what you look like before they hire you. Mm-hmm. And then some class and client pictures would be good. And, you know, another thing around pictures is I like to have people use different upload services for files. So like that's like Dropbox or Google Drive, and you know, just kind of be aware that, oh yeah, we might use that, and it's pretty darn easy. So it's just something, if you're going to be transferring pictures and large files, that you can get familiar with. So the pictures would be the third thing. The fourth thing that I like people to prepare is just looking online and seeing some websites that you like and you don't like. And so I have people give me 1 to 3 examples of websites they like. And they can tell me and look at the style, the feel, the function. I also have people give me 3 words that describe the website they want. And so, you know, you'd like your client to say when they look at your website that it is these 3 words. And so that just kind of gets people to, you know, whittle it down to like, okay, what are these 3 most important things? Because we can all get carried away and be like, well, I really like, you know, blue skies, but I also like, you know, black chalkboards. And it's just like, go on and on. So I really try to just get people to do like 1 to 3 websites you like. They can be yoga websites, they can be restaurant websites, or other dog trainer websites. But just, we want to get like the right kind of style that you like, so it'll be a clearer communication visually for the designer to understand. And then the fifth thing is some SEO kind of social media accounts. So it's not, you know, required, but I would say that it's a good thing to prepare to verify your business on Google locations, to maybe start or make sure, you know, you have social media accounts like Facebook, Twitter, maybe Yelp, depending on where you are and how much you like that. And social media will help your website get more hits as well. So those are things to consider. And I've helped people start accounts who never had Facebook or Twitter. And, you know, it's pretty easy. So I also will help people through these 5 things if they are feeling overwhelmed. And it's just something to be aware of, that you might need these 5 things as you put together your website.
Yeah. No, those are some really great tips.
Yeah.
I think my final question, since my website has now been up, I don't know, a couple of years, how often should we update and sort of change the look, feel? Are we just sort of doing an evaluation of our keywords, or do we really need to do a whole big redesign?
Yeah. You know, I think it depends on how many clients you want, how many clients you have. So sometimes if we just have a landing page and we're like, oh my God, I have way too many clients, don't need any more, then you're okay. You know, I don't think it's like do or die. However, if you're, you know, maybe wanting more clients, I would say definitely a good idea to look at your website and update it at least once a year. I would say a good rule of thumb is like, I know. I mean, it's also nice to just look at it like every couple of months. If you're doing like blog posts, or if your services are changing, then that number is going to increase, obviously. So if you have workshops that you want to post, you know, things like that. And depending on which builder you're using, you may have to look at it more often for updates on specific programs. Like I think WordPress sometimes has some maintenance updates that you may need to be looking at. And with Squarespace and Wix, they've been pretty reliable in that they kind of update everything already, so it's not as kind of wide as WordPress, but it's things are kind of set in place, and it's been easier to maintain, I would say, on those builders. Yeah.
Yeah, nice.
Awesome.
Thank you very much.
Sure, it's been awesome talking to you both.
Yeah, really, really great tips here. Let's say we have a listener that might want to get in touch with you. How do they do that?
Yeah, well, I am also a dog trainer, so you can go to my website. I have, you know, a design website and a dog training website, but my email is Alice, A-L-I-C-E, at C as in choose, P as in positive, dogtraining.com. So cpdogtraining.com, and that would be one way to reach me. And or you can look on my website. It's just www.choosepositivedogtraining.com, and there are links to my design site there. So the design site is www.choosepositivedesign.com, and so either of those websites will be a good way to get in touch with me.
Great. Well, we really appreciate you coming on today.
Yeah, it's been awesome talking to you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Modern Dog Trainer podcast. Don't forget, you can check out the show notes at themoderndogtrainer.net/podcast. You can also share your thoughts and support our podcast by leaving a review on iTunes. Until next time.